We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we are also very happy to have back on the program once again the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And for a long time now, he's been stopping by on a regular basis, first Wednesday of the month, and we talk about food and select a topic. And he's the guy who does the selecting and say, well, let's talk about whatever that is. Could be something that's really seasonal as at that time of year. Maybe it's the kind of cooking you're thinking about at a particular time. Could be summer, could be winter, could be fall. Sometimes we talk about a particular dish, something that you can do different ways. And then we say, well, what's your take on this? What's your special way of making whatever it is? And we tell stories and we exchange recipes. And one of the things that we see a lot is that foods have special places in people's lives that has to do with their families and with their growing up. And often it's attached to some special day. So we're now coming up to the time when there will be a lot of people will be gathering together for various kinds of celebrations with family and friends. And one of the things that is going to be a part of those celebrations is food. Sometimes there's special foods, and sometimes it's thing that you only have. You may only do that once a year, or maybe a couple of times a year. It's a special deal. So what Doyle was thinking about this time around, he said, well, he'd like to hear from people, what are your special holiday foods? Something that you're really looking forward to doing. Maybe you only do that one time, something that you only make one time during the year. And that's one of the things that makes it special. So why don't you, if you have a recipe like that, give us a call and tell us about it. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you can also send us an email. You send it to will-talk@illinois.edu. Anyway, we'd be happy to hear from folks and get them involved in the program. Hey, welcome back.
Yes, thank you. I'm here.
I'm glad to have you here. Is there anything in particular that you were thinking about, well, this is something now, time to do this.
Mainly because I have been cooking a little bit more than I have in the past, and I'm enjoying it so much. And I just thought, you know, I enjoy making things for other people. I've been doing that, and I like that very much. I thought, you know, that really is a joy to, gosh, I can make something that somebody likes. And I've been doing that because my eating habits have changed and altered, and they aren't quite as florid as they used to be. But so I get by making the things that I would like to make and then giving them away. And I do that regularly. And I did the pumpkin tort for Thanksgiving Day, the pumpkin tort we did last month. And that was fun. Again, because I got to eat some of it and then not have to deal with a whole lot of it hanging around, give it away. And so I did find a great pleasure in doing that. And I'm thinking, well, maybe people would like to just cook and give it away. You know, I mean, there are a lot of gifts from the kitchen kind of attitudes, and I pay more attention to that. The use of that kind of an outlet, because cooking is a delight. It's and especially if it comes out good, then you really think that you've done something that's worthwhile.
Well, and I think it's great if you can make something and give it to somebody else, and that they genuinely enjoy it.
And
they genuinely
enjoy
out of it.
Yes,
I think that. Well, that's great.
Well, that's exactly what happened. It was just this last week. You know, everybody asked me, like, somebody will come up to me this afternoon and say, mm-hmm. oh, what are you going to talk about next month? I said, well, it isn't even next month yet. How do I know? And these things, they're just intuitive thoughts that come to me. But like, mainly, it is what have I done that has pleased me for the last month? And then that generally becomes the subject matter. And I find it's within that zeitgeist kind of thing that other people are thinking about as well. And so we've been pleasurably happy with people's response because it's what people are thinking about at the time.
Yeah.
So it happened just the other day. I got all excited about a cake that could, or a pie that could easily be called a, if you knew what a Derby pecan pie is, it could be called that, or it could be called by an earlier name, which is a pumpkin. Let's see, what is it? What is the early name of that? Pumpkin? No, not pumpkin. Pecan chess, a pecan chess, chocolate pecan chess pie, and that's exactly what it is. And I found out the other day that Derby pie isn't as old as we thought that it was. It's only about 50 years old. But this chess pie, a chocolate chess pie.
Now I always think I have family. My dad's family is from Kentucky.
Yes.
So I know from my youth about chess pie, and I guess though the thing that I seem to remember, I always sort of thought about chess pie as being like pecan pie without pecans.
Without the pecans.
Yeah.
Okay, add the pecans and some chocolate, and you've got the Derby Day pie.
Oh, okay. And it's Derby like in Kentucky?
As in Kentucky. Well, it is special, especially on May for the Kentucky Derby. And since you brought up something, I know that folks are dying to know this. Why is it called chess pie? Now, there is a story, and I like the story, and I don't know if it's real or not, but it does make me laugh because it is so reasonable. It's a very straightforward pie. Chess pie is a very straightforward pie, which is just eggs and sugar, and that is mixed up together and put into and a little flavoring, eggs and sugar and a little flavoring, and that's mixed up and put into a pie crust and just baked. And the wife was asked, "What are you having?" "Oh, we're just having pie. What is it?"
"Well, it's just pie.
It's just pie." and that has been given credit for the fact that that's why it's chess pie. It has nothing to do with chestnuts or any word that is connected to any variety. So it's chess pie. And I like the idea because it is so plain and simple and fast and done. Mm-hmm. So there you are.
All right. Well, we have a couple of callers here to join us, and we'll start with somebody in Downs. How about that? Line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
If we're talking about holidays and giving away, I want to tell you a tradition that we have established in our family. I make on Christmas Eve Day something, a cardamom crans.
Ooh.
Which is Swedish. I'm not Swedish. I just found this recipe with a beautiful picture and had to make it. But it's just a rich cardamom flavored bread that's made into that's braided and then made into a round.
The Finnish call it pula.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I know that. Tell us about it.
Well, it makes these two big, I don't know, 12-14 inch rounds.
Oh, you put them into a ring?
After
you braid it?
No, you just braid it and attach it. You know, form it into a. Attach the ends together so it makes a round.
Yeah.
A wreath.
A wreath, yes.
After I made it, it was just so much.
Yes.
Huge amount. So this is our Christmas morning bread.
Oh, good.
It's what we eat when we open packages. But on Christmas Eve, the tradition is this bread is baked, and we take it to someone.
Oh, nice.
And it goes to someone who's done something nice for us, someone who's had a hardship, someone who's has 120 people at their house for Christmas, someone, you know, it just changes every year. The whole family gets in the car, we take it, we steadfastly refuse to go into the house.
Yes.
Because no one needs anybody new
right.
on Christmas Eve day. And it has become a lovely tradition.
I think that is, do you sing?
We used to, and it depended on how many people are here and how they do.
I think
my father was a great singer, and when he was with us, we always sang.
I think that you're describing something I think is a Swedish custom with this wreath of bread to go around and sing and give it to people. You're still doing what was done a long time ago.
Well,
I think
that's
wonderful. I think that's wonderful.
None of that is my tradition.
No, but it's a good one to do, isn't it?
But we've been doing it for so long, and it really is nice.
What a delight. And what do you call it, a cardamom?
It's called, I'll spell it for you.
Yes.
K-A-R-D.
Yes.
E-M-M-A-K-R-A-N-S.
Oh, it's got a whole nother, yeah. Oh.
So I'm sure that first part is cardamom.
Uh-huh.
And then crowns is cake or bread or something, I believe.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's it.
My friend who does come from a Swedish tradition tells me that you have to bounce the S when you pronounce it. So I called it cardamom a crowns when I was talking to her. She said, no, it's cardamom a crowns.
Oh, that's good. We'll put a little E on the end.
Right.
Secret E on the end. Well, that's very, very good. Well, that's the delight that I mean, and it does make you feel good when you do it, and it's something that you can do, and that makes you feel good, too.
It's also fun to, you know, sort of sit around and say, who are we taking this to this
week?
You know, who needs it? Who deserves it? Who, you know, who's a new friend? Who's, you know, there are all kinds of reasons, too.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
I like it.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to somebody. Have somebody here on the cell phone. Go right to them in Champaign. That's line one. Hello.
Yeah, David. Hi. Thanks for taking
my
call.
Sure.
I don't have a recipe per se, but just to share a couple of traditions with your guest.
Exactly.
I grew up in a Polish neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. And for some reason, I never figured it out, but it was a tradition. New Year's Eve, it was always important, as everyone eating at a table had to eat some odd number of food, either 7, 11, or 13 separate foods on the plate for good luck. And don't ask me where that came from or, you know, what it meant, but it was one of these things steeped in tradition. And then there was... As a kid, again, I remember there's all these strange foods that the grown-ups like pickled herring.
Yes.
You know, things like that that you'd see only once a year. But my mother made a dish, very simple, butternut squash, cut it in half, hollowed it out, baked it in the oven for just a little bit of time with maple syrup, and, you know, it was to die for. And just an observation as somebody in their mid-50s, I'm afraid with the way the American family structure is and all the rest of this that you talk to somebody in their mid-20s and everything's turned into buffalo chicken wings and pizza. I think, unfortunately, a lot of these things are going by the wayside. And, you know, at this point, I don't think there's a whole lot we can do about it. But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you. Thanks.
Well, that's very good. Well, I think you've done the right thing by reminding us. That's the main thing. I think that some people need to be re-reminded. You can turn around and look at maybe your grandparents and realize what they had done if you didn't do it in your immediate family, you know, and that would make a lot of difference. Oh, well, butterscotch, we use acorn squash. I love that.
We are here this morning with this guy that we call.
I'm sorry because he gave me a thought. He couldn't figure out why people ate things in
certain numbers.
Yes.
of things.
I had a poet friend and designed a book. the tagline on the book said, "There is divinity in odd numbers," and I don't know if that was Shakespeare. Or the Bible. I think it might have been Shakespeare, who was very biblical anyway. There's a divinity in odd numbers. And so just as a meanness, he then later said, why did you print 103 copies of this? I said, Jonathan, you didn't read your title, that there's divinity in odd numbers.
Huh.
And so at least that thought of dealing with odd numbers is not outrageous. You know, it's something that's done.
All right. A guy here with me is this man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. He's with us once a month on the first Wednesday. We talk about food. We've been doing that for a long time. He picks out some particular topic, and then we kick that around and tell stories and share recipes. And this time, as we are coming into a period when a lot of people do get together to observe various kinds of holidays, families and friends, and since food is always a big part of that, he was interested in, well, do you have a special holiday food, something that you're really looking forward to having? And it may be something that you only do one time a year at this time of year. Or maybe you just have a good food memory that you might like to share. Any and all of that is certainly certainly good. Just give us a call, 333-9455. And the toll-free line is 800-222-9455. And the email is will-talk@illinois.edu. And yes, in fact, it was Shakespeare. That's a line from Merry Wives of Windsor. They say there is divinity in odd numbers, either in nativity, chance, or death.
Well, there you are.
That's it. Good luck lies in odd numbers, is the quote. So there you have it.
Well, then I would say that was an old Shakespearean tradition.
To another caller. Let's talk with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
I have an oatmeal cookie. It's called the Ultimate Oatmeal Cookie. I don't know if we can say where it's from.
Oh, yes, say where it's from.
Okay, Cooks Illustrated.
Good.
They do good work.
You betcha.
And I'm telling you, this cookie is it's wonderful.
Good.
And we usually give this for gifts.
Yes.
And have even used it to raise money for charity. But it has roasted pecans in it,
yes.
Dried sour cherries,
oh.
And I use Ghirardelli chocolate bars, 60%,
oh, gosh.
That are just chopped up in different sized chunks. It has real butter, dark brown sugar.
Yes.
And then you have to make sure, one important thing, you take it out when it looks like it's not done.
Oh, yes, it's still puffed up just a little bit.
Yeah,
if you were to touch it, it would probably be soft, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it looks a little shiny.
Yes. And
they
then
come out about 4 inches.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
They take time, but, oh, my goodness. I think it's the best cookie I've ever tasted.
Now, I can't eat oatmeal anymore. So I use rolled spelt.
Oh,
and
okay.
And you know the truth, I cannot tell the difference.
If you
fed it to me, I wouldn't know the difference. I can eat rolled spelt exactly as I eat oatmeal, and I use it. I use it in a raisin pecan oatmeal cookie too. I brought a recipe along today, and it's one of my favorite recipes right now. And it is good, isn't it? But you put chocolate in it too.
Yes, and it's
cherries, and chocolate, and oatmeal, and what else was it? Some.
Dried sour cherries. Dried, and they really make the cookie good. And I think the Ghirardelli chocolate is just out of this world.
Well, it is, isn't it?
It's a 60% one, and it's sour enough that it's just right. And you don't make the chunks equal. You just top it around and make sure they're big enough to really taste like a candy bar when you eat the cookie.
Oh, yeah. That's always a surprise. Mashed down on a lot of chocolate. I use the Ghirardelli chocolate chips, and I get those in great quantity.
Well, you can do that, but I don't know.
It saves chopping up the bar. But
yeah.
I agree with you. I like the shape of chocolates that are in the bar that are small and large. Yeah, small and large. Because always a surprise.
So there you go.
Oh, that is wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
I don't think you can hardly go far wrong if you put Ghirardelli chocolate in anything.
You're right. You're quite right.
It reminds me, people have heard, they'll can start running to turn off the radio about my famous fruitcake. But some months back, I don't know when it was, I just started thinking, well, the thing about that fruitcake is it uses a big mixture of a lot of different kinds of dried fruit, which I like. And it has dried cherries and cranberries, apricots, currants, blueberries, golden raisins, all of that. And I thought, well, maybe what? How about taking that, you know, basically use that mixture of dried fruit and put it in an oatmeal cookie? And I just went and found an oatmeal cookie recipe that I liked, and I used that dried fruit, and I put in some pecans, and I made oatmeal cookies with this mixture of dried fruits. And I thought, now that was pretty good.
That was very good.
It was really good.
And it was very, very thick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, it wasn't a thin batter.
No, it wasn't. No, you're right.
Very,
yes,
very
it was.
Thick.
It was a pretty stiff batter.
Yeah,
it was a little pesky, actually.
So you have that's where I just love. I finally succumbed and got scoops, and you can scoop it out, and they're absolutely perfect.
You learned that from Alton Brown.
I
you?
Learned that from he does. In fact, I now have three scoops.
That guy, there's never
this
a kitchen
that
gadget
one.
That guy didn't. Well,
you're right.
Almost. I think though he's. I mean, he's a right tool for the job kind
you're
of
exactly.
guy. That's his.
That's
thing,
it.
You know. Exactly. All right. Well, let's keep going here. Let's go and talk with someone in Urbana. Line number two. Hello.
Hello there.
Yeah, hi.
You'd ask for holiday traditions, and so I would just tell you that our holiday tradition in our family, and it has been for, like, as long as I can remember, 50 years, is red velvet cake.
Oh, my. You're from the South, aren't you?
Well, not I, but I guess both of my family came from at least Southern Illinois.
Yes.
And it's a scratch. It's from scratch. And I've seen red velvet seems to be making a comeback now.
It is, isn't it?
Cupcakes, I see it all over. And every time I get one, I am so disappointed because it doesn't taste like my mom's red velvet cake.
Oh.
And I would give you the recipe, except I'm driving down the highway and I don't have it with me right now. But it takes a long time to make, and you stir in this ingredient slowly, and you put this aside, and it's definitely a cake from scratch that takes some work.
Oh, good, yeah.
The icing that goes with it, I'm not as fond of. It's a very, I don't know, the frosting that it's on the recipe is kind of greasy. It's got Crisco in it. I think they avoided the butter because they wanted it to be very white.
That would have been, yeah, that would have been an old recipe, yeah, from the 40s or 50s at least,
yeah.
Using Crisco.
Right.
I know.
I understand why people would want to use a sour cream or a cream cheese frosting. I think it's just as pretty. But, no, the moistness of this red velvet cake and the flavor of it that's just so delicate and yet so different from any other cake anybody's ever eaten. I just love it. And, of course, it's very festive with the red and the white.
Now,
I can't give you the recipe.
Do you put chocolate in that as well? Or
yes.
Cocoa, isn't it?
Cocoa. It's cocoa that you put in.
Red food coloring.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
I am impressed by the fact that as she noted, that there's a lot of red velvet cakes and red velvet cupcakes. Well, Paula Deen did some red velvet cupcakes, as I remember, not too long ago. In fact, twice within the last year, she's done red velvet cakes.
I guess that's another one of those examples of how stuff just comes around. You know,
it goes
away for a while, and then somebody discovers it again, and suddenly it's kind of like it's a new thing.
Well, I think yes, but two other things are there's another thing involved. It's called, what are we going to talk about today? You know,
oh,
and
yes.
So all of a sudden, oh well, let's bring this up. Or we've talked about that 1,000 times. Let's talk about something else. And I think that there's a lot of revival of cooking. I think some of it might be in direct response to the preciousness of these architectural devices that people put in front of you for food, especially on Iron Chef. You know, there they are. The display is, you got to smear something here and dribble something there and pile it up there. And the higher you can get it, then the more kudos you get. I think that it may be a response called, let's just put food on the plate and have it.
All right. Questions, comments, recipes, stories, welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. The man here with me is the guy that we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And once a month, he stops by and we talk about food and cooking. And we've been doing that for a long time here on the program. Just real quick here, I want to mention, if you like to cook, here's another show we would suggest you tune in for. This is going to be on Monday on this program at 11 o'clock, Celeste Quinn will be here as the host, and she will be talking with James Beard Award-winning cookbook author Dory Greenspan. She's been on this program before. You probably have heard her on All Things Considered. She has a new book out that's called Around My French Table, and she generally, what she does, a lot of her writing is all about baking. But this is a little bit of a departure from baking, and this is a really, I've had a chance to look at the book, and there's a lot of really good stuff in there. There are soups and stews and salads and roast meats and fish and shellfish, and yes, there are desserts. She says this is elbows on the table food.
That's what I mean.
She said they're recipes where the ingredients are easy to get. Almost everything, she says, can be bought at your neighborhood supermarket. Techniques are straightforward and practical, as they must be, because, she says, French home cooks are just as busy as we are. Dory's pretty well known in the cookbook writing world. In fact, she worked with Julia Child on Baking with Julia.
Mm.
So if you like to cook, you might want to make a note here. If you can, tune in. This will be Monday, December 6th, the 11 o'clock hour of this show, Focus. Celeste Quinn will be talking with cookbook author Dory Greenspan about her brand new book, Around My French Table. Now, for us here, let's talk with somebody else, and this will be somebody in Charleston. Line number one. Hello.
Oh, thanks for your programs. I have been a regular listener.
Good.
I'm not from Illinois, but when we came here, there were two things that I was introduced to. One were the wild persimmon, and the second one were black walnuts, since we have both of those on our property.
Oh, my, yes. Where did you come from?
Nevada.
You wouldn't have had very many persimmons there. Nope.
This year happened to be a rather exceptional year for the persimmons, and they were nice size. And so we gather them and then strip the flesh and freeze the pulp.
Oh, yes.
But substitute persimmon for a good pumpkin chiffon pie.
Oh, you'd make it that way.
And we serve this for Thanksgiving as well as Christmas. I don't really make it the rest of the year.
Yes.
But the rest of the pumpkin, the persimmons I use in a pumpkin cookie recipe with the black walnuts.
Oh, black walnuts and
persimmons. And it's excellent. And I give my gifts that I give to all our nieces and nephews are an international box of cookies, and
yes,
one of those I include are these persimmon black walnut cookies.
Oh, that sounds...
You can use a favorite recipe with this. It's just a matter of substituting a better food.
Persimmon pulp instead of pumpkin. Yes. I don't know if it still exists. Somebody can probably call and tell, but since I've been here so long, this is my 51st or 2nd year at the university. and when you walked out of the old architecture building going over toward the library, which would be from the south going to the north, there were 5 persimmon trees. And I used to go out and gather the persimmons. I haven't done it for so long. I don't know if it's still there or not. They made a mess on the road, or on the sidewalk. But persimmons are a magical thing. By folklore, they're called possum persimmons, and they're little ones.
Little ones.
Yeah.
They have a lot more flavor.
They have a lot of flavor.
Hitachi.
And you have to wait until they are frozen before you can eat them.
Right.
They freeze and then fall onto the ground. I love them. I don't know
if you can get there before the deer and the possums and raccoons.
Exactly. Isn't that true? I'm drooling at persimmons and black walnuts. That is good. By the way, you can buy black walnuts at Sam's. I found them at last. Yeah, black walnuts are shelled and packages of them are at Sam's.
In some of the Amish grocery stores, you can also get the black walnuts shelled and packaged.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, at least it's still alive, is it?
Black
walnuts
well,
and persimmons.
Thank you for taking my call.
I'm going to look that up. That's going to be a new favorite of mine already. Persimmons,
well, thank you.
And black walnuts.
Thanks for the call. This, I remember we've talked about persimmons, and you mentioned that you very generously mentioned the secret. Talked about where the trees were.
Yes, where they were. I don't know if they're still there or not.
No.
Maybe somebody will call in and say, oh, yes, they're still there. I got some yesterday.
And now, for the benefit of those who have never had a persimmon, how would you describe the flavor?
Exotic. It's not like eating a fresh peach. It's not like eating a fresh fruit because it's sort of past prime. It has to be very, very dead ripe would be the right answer. It has to be dead ripe. And if you eat them too soon, you won't eat them too soon. You can't. They're very astringent. They will make your lips curl up. Your lips will curl up, and you can't talk, and your teeth don't stick to the So don't eat a persimmon that hasn't been frozen and dropped on the ground. The wild ones. Now you can get persimmons. There's the Japanese style of persimmons that are available every once in a while, and especially in California. I have a friend who has a tree in California, and I've been so jealous of it because that tree just abounds in big, huge persimmons, and they're good. Now they can be eaten as a fruit that you could actually slice, very much like slicing an apple. They're coarse you don't peel the skin off or anything, uh-huh. And they're quite good, and they're put into various kinds of dishes that. How do the Japanese use that? They're eaten mostly as a fresh salad, that kind.
Oh.
And I remember this is how I put two things together. when I was just newly in Japan, I hadn't been there too long when I was in the military, and the bus to get to town stopped in a little town, and then you would get a bigger bus and go on into Tokyo. Right at the bus station, there was a little vegetable stand, and they had persimmons. Now, persimmons are also used dried. Oh, yes. There are dried persimmons, and you can get those in the Oriental stores here in town, the persimmons, and dried. But they had these persimmons, and I just lusted after them, but I didn't know what they were. I knew they were persimmons. I'd go in and thump them. No, they're too hard. And I found three that were just exactly right. They were really dead, was what it was. And they were selling three of them for something like 10 cents. And I bought all three of them, and the person was, you want these? And the answer was, oh, yes. And I just ate them down, and they tasted quite right. And I laughed at that I had taken the tail end of the crop, which I thought was perfect, but that wasn't the way it was done. Yeah, dried persimmons. Dried persimmons were used as one of the few sweets in Japan and China. I think China had them as well. Japan did. Dried persimmons, and you can buy them today. They're funny. They're flat. They look like hubcaps. They are they must wait to a certain point so that you could collapse the fruit, but they're sort of packed together and fry. And I remember there were dried strings of persimmons on houses and such. I'd sort of forgotten all that. Well, that's for persimmons. Boy, persimmons and black walnuts. I'm all for that.
All right.
Yay.
We're moving now into our last 15 minutes of this morning's Focus program. First Wednesday of the month for a long time in the 10 o'clock hour. We've been talking about food with this guy. We like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And we pick something, and often it's something that has a seasonal connection. For that month's topic, we verge into, wander into different areas. There's not a rule that you have to stick by that topic, but that gives us our starting point. And this time around, he said, we're coming up to a holiday period, and for a lot of people, some kind of special food is often the part of holiday celebrations. And so he said, let's hear from folks. Tell us about some special holiday food item that you're looking forward to. And maybe, as some callers have suggested, maybe that it's something that you make and that you actually give it away as gifts, or you like to share that with other people. Or maybe that's just something that's really important in your family. where that's something that's part of the family celebration. So you can call us, 333-9455 and 800-222-9455, or you could send an email to will-talk@illinois.edu. Any way you like, you can be a part of the conversation. Is you want to share something?
Well, I have, but we've got a listener.
Well, we're getting the, somebody here, indeed, yes, lined up on our line number one. And as soon as we do, and now we got it, the other lines are ringing, as sometimes happens. So be patient with us. Kyle Mabry is going to get everybody lined up here. And apparently we had a caller here who would heard the discussion of about the red velvet cake.
Yes.
And maybe they're not completely familiar with it. And they're wondering, well, is there a difference between devil's food and chocolate cake, and is there also a difference between red devils and red velvet cake?
That's kind of a problem. Since these really aren't such traditional cakes, red velvet cake was introduced into Texas, I think Texas, and only about 50 years ago. It's not too old, and I think that there was some relationship to something that was called a German chocolate cake. And it was called German chocolate because the chocolate maker's name was German, not because it came from Germany. And that somehow somebody put some extra red coloring into something and confused two cakes together. But the red velvet cake has chocolate in it. And I don't know that it shares fame with any other cake. I think it's unique.
Okay.
But it does have cocoa in it. The German chocolate used German Mr. German's chocolate, and that became very popular for a while. But there may be a confusion there of a couple of cakes.
Okay, and I suppose there are probably a lot of different recipes for red velvet.
It seems that a lot of people have them, and some, in fact, Bobby Flay had a red velvet cake throwdown with a woman in New York City, within the last year, and hers was a traditional recipe.
Okay, and by the way, I want to mention here that our caller from Downs who called in with the recipe for Swedish cardamom crumbs has very generously emailed us the recipe, and it's fairly involved. So there's really no way that we can actually read it to people and expect them to follow it along here. But we have it. So if people would just like to drop us line, send us a postcard, letter, email, whatever, we have the recipe, and we can make
a
copy.
Oh, great! Thank you for sharing that
out to folks. And then we will also go back to the phones here. We have a couple of Urbana folks here. Line two is next in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yes.
On Christmas Eve, our family always has our version of a Scandinavian smorgasbord.
Oh.
And with all sorts of dishes. But the thing that always seems to disappear first and that everybody looks forward to are the Swedish meatballs.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And the recipe that I use is a little different from other Swedish meatballs.
Yes.
I've had. I got it from a Swedish friend, so I assume it's fairly authentic. But the difference is the sauce, really. The meatballs themselves are pretty standard. A pound of ground beef, a half a pound of ground pork, one egg, a third of a cup of breadcrumbs, two-thirds of a cup of milk, a teaspoon of salt, eighth of a teaspoon of pepper, two tablespoons of grated onion. And then just mix that all together and make little balls and brown them in butter. And then I usually freeze them, make them head and freeze them.
Oh, yes.
On Christmas Eve, the sauce is a half a pound of sliced mushrooms sautéed in butter. Then you add one teaspoon of flour and one cup of whipping cream.
One cup of whipping cream, yes.
And then you just add the meatballs and let them simmer for about a half an hour or, however long you need to have them there. And everyone loves them.
I'll bet that's really quite fresh. Mushrooms and thickened with flour and pushed up with
whipping cream.
And then you heat that, don't you?
Then you heat that.
Yeah.
Then you just let them simmer for about half an hour.
Yeah, and then the cream will thicken up. The flour will thicken. And that's better than opening a can of Campbell's, isn't it?
Yeah, they are good.
And meatballs that's a good one to know because I like that. It's not sweet and it's not sour.
Right.
No, it sounds very good.
And then we also have a big platter of cold meats, ham and turkey and shrimp and smoked salmon, and then various salads, deviled eggs, pickled beets, fresh rolls.
Wow.
I've made and so on. That's one of our special.
That makes it worthwhile looking forward to, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very good.
Boy,
thank you.
Mushrooms,
bye-bye.
Flour, and cream. I'm all for that.
Let's go on to another caller here. Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Hello. I went to a restaurant last night, and I had quince, or is it quince? And I just don't know very much about quince or quince, but it seemed kind of holiday-ish and festive and nice and juicy. So I wondered if you could just enlighten me. The way we had it was served on thin slices of cheese, which was delicious.
Oh.
With strawberries on top.
I wonder, it wasn't the fruit, it was a mixture of the fruit.
It was the fruit, it was cheeses with a layer of quince or quince.
Quince.
And then a strawberry on top. Another layer of cheese and a strawberry on top. So they sliced it thin.
I can't think of the next word that goes with quince. There's a, it's not jelly and it's not jam and it's kind of a loaf so you would be able to cut. Quince is a fruit that, oh goodness, what can I say about that? I know it's grown a lot in California. There are a lot of people that have quince trees in California. It's a very hard fruit. It's not like it's like nothing else you've ever eaten. And they used to make a jam or this cake out of it, and then you would have it. And there's a mango jam made very much like it. That you could buy, and it's used in the same way to complement cheese. But this was from a restaurant.
Yes.
Hmm.
It was delicious, and I don't think I'd ever had it before, and I thought this could be a nice holiday hors d'oeuvre.
It would be. It would be. I think it probably rates up there with the various jams you put on sweets that you put onto cream cheese and eat it with crackers as a beginner. So it would be the same sort of thing with that quince. I'm sorry, I just can't think of the right word to call it. There's another word that follows quince.
It's not quince jelly, is that what you're
talking
about?
Not really a jelly. No, it's a kind of a thick loaf.
You
would be able to slice it off like you would slice cheese.
Uh-huh.
But maybe somebody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it was just so juicy. It was almost like those gelled cranberries.
Yes.
And it's actually a little stiffer than that. So it was kind of hard to tell at first because they did a lot of dishes. We went to the tapas place and they did a lot of dishes with ham, sliced ham. And at first we thought, is this like thick ham, because it was before we tasted it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
We knew it was not.
Yeah, that's good. Quince. That's it. They too are a very strange fruit. I can see myself standing in front of a quince bush in Newport. No, not Newport. In Southern California.
I figured it wasn't in season either.
No, it's not.
So it's probably fairly pricey.
I don't think I've ever been offered any quinces raw, fresh.
Uh-huh.
I think you would have to be where they're grown. So I think this thing is a compound. It wouldn't have been a fresh fruit.
I see.
But you were lucky to have that. What cheese did you have it with?
I don't remember, but it was, they were not standard cheeses. I even want to say maybe a sliced Parmesan. I mean, that's not one that you normally slice.
Or a pecorino.
Maybe Asiago?
Yeah. Could have been Asiago or maybe pecorino.
Yes, and it was really delicious.
I'd vote for pecorino and quince, this quince marmalade or whatever it is on it. That's good.
We enjoyed it, I can tell you that.
Good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
That would make a good holiday thought.
Thanks. We have maybe about 5 minutes. Is there a particular recipe that you'd like to share?
Well, I had two or three that I brought here. I think I would like to push what I just last made. It's real fast. Mm-hmm. It's real easy.
Okay.
It's back to the chocolate pecan pie that I made. It's very, very easy to make. 1/2 cup of butter. That's one stick melted. And I cut the sugar down on this, and I use 1/2 cup of brown sugar and 1/2 cup of dark Cairo syrup. I've taken that and cut it down. It's plenty. And 4 large eggs and 1 1/2 teaspoons of vanilla and, of course, 1/4 cup of bourbon. You mix all of that up. You mix all that, which is very fast. Melted butter, sugar, syrup, eggs, and vanilla and bourbon, and mix all of that up. And then you add 3/4 of a. I just grabbed 3 handfuls of chocolate chips. That's about 3/4 cup of chocolate chips, and 1 1/4 cups of toasted pecans or walnuts. And then I got to thinking, one recipe that I'd looked at put in some flour. And as I recall, a tradition with a chess pie is that you use cornmeal. The next one I'm going to make, I'm going to put 2 tablespoons of cornmeal in it instead of 1/4 cup of flour. And that's all mixed up and thrown into a crust, which has, but it's going to be deep. You want a deep pie pan, and it cooks for 50 minutes, exactly 50 minutes at 350, and boy, is it good. The pecans come to the top, and the chocolate goes to the bottom, mm-hmm. and the other stuff stays in the middle, and it uses one pan. You don't have to mix up a bunch of stuff. It's very, very fast. Butter, brown sugar and dark Cairo syrup, and 4 large eggs, and vanilla, and bourbon, and chocolate chips, and pecans, and either a choice of flour or the added cornmeal. Chess pie has to have cornmeal in it, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
So I'll make it that way next. I made that up and took it to a party the other night. It was a lot of fun. It was gone. I didn't bring any home. In case you want to know, can you take something and have it done?
Okay. And we can again, if people would like to have this recipe, we can.
Oh, yes. I've got it right here.
We can send it to them. Okay. Somebody wants to call real quick. Get in here before the end of the show. We have a couple minutes left. So 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I guess I had been thinking before when the caller called in with the Swedish cardamom bread. I was just thinking about how interesting and unusual the taste of cardamom is.
Oh, it's very, yeah.
And about how probably a lot of people, unless you've had it, some kind of Scandinavian thing.
Or Indian,
because, yes, yep. It is used in Indian cooking. But as a sort of a really standout thing, I'm not sure that you would really recognize that taste. You know what it is. It's very unusual.
It's unusual. Yeah. I have a friend who prefers to fry apples using cardamom.
Ah.
So, and it's M-O-M.
It's cardamom.
Cardamom. But it's always pronounced cardamom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think that's just a folk pronunciation.
I knew someone once who liked to put it in their coffee. Which was pretty interesting. That must be a Scandinavian thing.
I think that's closer to Indian.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because what?
Because there's cardamom in tea, and milk and cardamom. Those flavors.
And she would just sort of mix it in with the coffee, and then use the old the basic method where you just pour the water through and make drip coffee. That
now the Finns drink so much coffee that, and the Finns use cardamom a lot.
So that's because I sort of thought that it was. I had the idea that it must have been some kind of Scandinavian,
yeah.
Something that comes from that sort of tradition, combining that flavor with coffee.
Well, it's rare. But it's expensive, and you get it in 3 forms. You can get dried. Nuts in their little shell. They look like, I don't know what they look like. they're funny.
Yeah.
And there's some of them that are green and some of them are ripe. And then I don't know that you ever get seeds, but you get ground seeds.
Well, I think you can actually get the whole, I think you get whole cardamom.
The whole
seed.
The whole, well, it's it. No, it, no, those are little black seeds inside that thing that you think is the cardamom seed. You have to break it open and get the little black seeds out of it and then crush it with a rolling pin.
So we're talking about the pod.
The pod.
Being one thing and then the actual, seeds in
it. Right.
Okay.
There is, and sometimes I think maybe the pod is just thrown in, and but you would want to take it out because you can't. I don't know how you use the pod in any other way. Mostly it's you break them and you get the seeds out and you grind them with a.
Oh, I guess now that I think about it, I've in some Indian recipes I've used whole cardamom pods of both kinds. And I think what you do is you probably just to make sure you can get them out of there, you put them in a little cheesecloth, and then you toss them in there.
So you're going to get
that husk out of there.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be
yes.
It.
Real quick, let's go to Muhammad, line one. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hi. Yes.
Yes. I know people make fun of fruitcake, but I really love fruitcake.
Oh, boy. Good for you.
I do.
I do, too.
Well, I'd like to make one, but I like it heavy on the nuts, and I wondered if you had a recipe for that.
I just happen to have one here. I'm going to give it to you real fast because we're running out of time, but real fast.
Great.
1/2 pound of butter with 1 cup of sugar, 5 large eggs, 1 3/4 cup of flour, and you coat the fruit with some of the flour, and 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder, 3/4 pound of glacé cherries and of pineapple, and dice those up, and some pecans, 4 cups of pecans, and 1/2 ounce of vanilla or lemon and vanilla extract, and it cooks for at 250, which is low, for 3 hours in a tube pan, or I put it in the small loaf pans and it cooks a little bit slower. So that was butter and eggs and flour and baking powder and the fruit, which one family only does the cherries, but they had cherries and pineapple. This is a handwritten thing, and I grabbed it quickly this morning. It's called the best white fruit cake on earth. It's a white. It won't be a dark one.
Okay.
So you don't use brown sugar. Let's see, where's the sugar? There's flour, baking powder.
And that's I've got to jump in here because we got to go. That recipe is actually on our website.
It is, isn't it?
Yes. If you go to Focus and where it says recipes, it's in the recipes for December 2008. There's we did a bunch of fruitcakes on that show, and as long as you got the internet, you can get that recipe that way.
Yeah, best white fruitcake on earth.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, we kind of go. We're at the end of the time. We just have enough time to say thanks.
You
see you next month.
Thanks. See you next month.